Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So this morning, for the next few days, I'll be speaking about some of my time with Srila Prabhupada. Of course, I'm following my god sister here, Daiva Shakti Prabhu. 5 days she's been giving you, very elaborate. 6 days, that's right, 6 days she's been giving a chronological description of Srila Prabhupada's activities. I've been listening to them, and I can only say she's very difficult to follow, give a class after her, because her descriptions are wonderful. Her consciousness is super. I joined actually in Philadelphia, 1971. She was there at that time. She was already in the temple. So that was April of 71 when I came. As I've heard her describe in class previously, this was like more or less like the next wave of devotees that were coming. Those that came early, 66, 67, 68, we can see all of the service that they've done, the service that they're doing. I, like her, I also felt very neophyte, still feel very neophyte. Being with Srila Prabhupada as his servant, many of the people that I contacted, many of Prabhupada's disciples were 10 years older than me. They had been devotees for 5 years, 6 years, 7 years. This was at that time, that was a very long time. We recognized them as senior devotees. When I first joined, I spent 1 week in Pittsburgh Temple, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. That's about 2 hours away from New Vrindavan. And I was brought there by Kirtanananda Swami. Of course, he's always has been an influence in my life. It was through him that I became Prabhupada's servant. So from the very beginning, we went to Pittsburgh. And after a week, he had just bought the farm, Bahulaban Farm, which to this day is still the main farm in New Vrindavan. So then I was transferred to New Vrindavan and began my service, my services there. I was thinking today, I wanted to speak about attention to details. This is not going to be chronological classes over the next few days. I don't have the ability to do that. But even as I was performing the Artik Guru Puja, those of you who pay attention to details, you'll know who put the garland on Srila Prabhupada, who put the chandan on him, who was doing the Artik. As I was doing the Artik, I saw the Gopi chandan dripping down over his eyebrow. And then when it started to go down to his eye, cover his eye, I realized I had to stop and do something. Because what I learned being Prabhupada's servant is everything is in the details. Krishna consciousness is about the details. I just see our temple president there. He's always details going on. This has to be taken care of. Why wasn't this person here? The pujari should have been here at such and such time. He wasn't here. Everything we do, we have to learn the details. We have to learn how to be attentive. So in the course of daily activities in New Vrindavan, like everyone, we were serving full-time, 24 hours a day, except for maybe 5 hours sleeping, 6 hours at the most. But by nature, we develop routines. Just like even within this this lockdown, how this pandemic, we develop habits, we develop routines. Maybe we were going to Mangal Artik every day. But now we're not coming to the temple. Sometimes some are getting up for Mangalartik, watching it on the TV screen. Others, we sleep in a little bit. And after a while, you develop a habit. So this is always going on in Krishna consciousness, these habits. But if we focus on being attentive, and it's what I learned very quickly becoming Srila Prabhupada's servant, you have to be attentive to the details, because Prabhupada was very attentive. He saw everything going on. He could tell you what everyone was doing in the room at any given time. I've told stories. I wanted to avoid telling different stories that I have told here and other places many times. But just to mention, even sitting with a dozen devotees at the program, all taking prasadam, he could tell you how many puris I ate. He could tell you how many puris Prajumna ate. How did he do this? It wasn't just mystic powers. He was observant. He was always observing everything. So when I first became his servant, we left New Vrindavan. And Dallas, of course, very first thing he did was teach me how to use the cooker. Because doing that was not something everyone could master. I didn't find it difficult, but it required practice. He taught me 3 days how to use the cooker. 3 days, one after the other. And while the cooker was going on, I was giving him massage. But while the massage was going on, he was explaining what was going on with the cooker, what needed to be done with the cooker. And we're just 5 feet away from this cooker. Anyway, I picked that up, and then we traveled through Dallas, then we went to Los Angeles. And I was beginning to learn the services that I needed to do, what it was to be personal servant. There's no more attention to detail than when you're a pujari or personal servant. You may be able to get away with things in the course of different services. You might forget this, forget that. There's no one to say anything to you. But when you were with Prabhupada, if you forgot what you were supposed to do, if you just one little thing slipped by, he would let you know. So the first time that happened to me was in Hawaii. He stayed there it was a very quick trip, one day. He left the next day, traveling west. And I brought him his lunch. After lunch, I went in, I took the plate, went back, cleaned the plates, went on. 10 minutes later, I hear the bell ringing. So I go in the room, said, "You haven't washed the table." "Why haven't you washed the table?" "Because the plate of prasadam was there." This is what we learned as devotees, Brahminical standards. We all did this back in those days. Everyone was responsible for washing their little spot where they sat and ate. We didn't have cleaners come in when everything was done, clean up after us. We cleaned up after ourselves. A bucket of water was there in the corner, the cloth was there. After you took prasadam, you cleaned your spot. You cleaned your plate. These were the details, the things we had to do. So I knew that, but somehow or other I didn't do it. But Prabhupada saw everything he was doing, but he saw that I didn't clean the table. See, this is attention to detail. Even this morning when I look at Prabhupada, I always look at how the garland is around his neck. These pujaris, they make the flower garlands. They spend hours making these flower garlands. They're attentive. Everything is perfect. They have the red roses here, the yellows here, the whites, and everything lines up. And then we come on and we put the garland on Prabhupada. It's this way, it's that way, and I'm doing artik, and it drives me crazy. I have to go up and make it so. Is it correct now? Hopefully it's correct. Because these are the details. This is what not that just I learned from Prabhupada, it's what always goes in my head. These are the things that are part of being Krishna conscious. It's consciousness. Prabhupada was fully conscious. That's why we're having this class. You don't see a Bhagavatam verse up there, because we say Prabhupada's person Bhagavatam, person Bhagavat. Everything he did was perfect. every movement he made. So for me, and he didn't yell, he just said, clean the table. You're Brahmin. I was initiated Brahmin after 1 year. And 3 months later, I was with him. So I was still very new. You have someone here 16 months? What's that? That's nothing. Huh? Now you can't even put saffron on. We would join the temple, they'd put saffron on you the first day. Shave your head. Boom, you were a brahmachari. So that was in Hawaii. So then from Hawaii, so now I'm with Prabhupada literally 10 days. Then he went to Philippines, Manila, Philippines. And our god brother Burjan, he had programs there. Prabhupada had sent him and his wife there to spread Krishna consciousness in this very difficult area at that time. Also, I see that wherever Prabhupada went, you have a temple. It's almost certain. If he put his lotus feet there, a temple was going to spring up. It was that simple, just by his presence. So we were there and staying in a hotel room. And of course, Philippines, Asia, they're very nice fruits, tropical fruits all year long. So that was nice. Prabhupada liked. So for breakfast, papaya, mango, some things I had never heard of before, all there on the plate. And on this trip, Prabhupada had brought Siddha Swarup and one of his loyal members, Sudama Vipra. So Prabhupada had given them both sannyasi. They were both with traveling because Prabhupada wanted them to understand the philosophy. Because Prabhupada had read a book by Siddha Swarup, and it was about, I think, Krishna and Christ, something like that. Anyway, the devotees had gone over this book, and they brought all these different points to Srila Prabhupada, these philosophical points that weren't proper understanding in our Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada understood the Siddha Swarup. He's a big deal. He has lots of followers. He already had 200 followers when he joined ISKCON and surrendered to Prabhupada and surrendered his followers to Prabhupada. But his followers were, many of them were just very loyal to Siddha himself. Because he was with Prabhupada, they were also serving Prabhupada. But they pointed out these discrepancies, these philosophical deviations. So Prabhupada said, I'll have him travel with me so that he could understand the philosophy. He traveled with Prabhupada for over a month that time, coming all through India, described that. And this Sudama Vipra, he was a... this was 1972, so he had a skull and crossbones on his arm, you know, tattoo. Now everyone has tattoos. You say tattoo, no big deal. At that time, having a tattoo was unusual, to say the least. And his tattoo was a skull and crossbones. He was that kind of a person, but he joined Krishna consciousness through Siddha. Anyway, I put the plate down, cut up all these wonderful fruits, and Prabhupada's eating in this hotel room and sitting there, and he said, looked at me, his servant, all of 2 weeks, 21 years old, he said, I want hot milk. We're in a hotel room. There's no little kettles, nothing to do. So it meant to go down to the kitchen in this hotel in Manila, Philippines, and boil the milk. So I got the pot, I had Prabhupada's milk, which was cold, put it in the pot, go down the elevator, 10 floors or so, find my way down into this basement kitchen, and I'm there, I have to heat this milk up. So these people, they just look at me, dressed, you know, shaved head, all this, and they just said, you're not allowed in the kitchen. So I made some endeavor, and they just said, no one can come into the kitchen. So I went back up. I went back up and Prabhupada said, I want hot milk. So I went back down into the kitchen. And this time I tried a little more forcefulness, which for me was never an easy thing. To this day, it's not an easy thing, to push myself into any situation. And I failed. So I came back up. I said, "Prabhupada, I can't get into the kitchen." Prabhupada just looked at me. He said, "You're not serious. Imagine having your spiritual master tell you, you're not serious," he said. Sudama Bripa was over to the side. He looked just like that tattoo. That's basically what he looked like. He said, "Give me the pot." He grabs the pot. He goes down. 3 minutes later, he comes up, boiled milk. Prabhupada looks at him, big smile on his face. Sudama Bripa says, "Sometimes you have to yell." Prabhupada just shook his head. So that's Krishna consciousness. You have to understand what to do and then do it. This attention to details. Being Prabhupada's servant, it was always the details. So many little things that most people wouldn't even see that happened while it was going on. Before I became his servant in L.A., I used to observe those things with his servant, Nanda Kumar at the time. I used to watch all the little activities he did for Prabhupada, helping him up onto the Vyasasan, grabbing his cane, opening the box with the glasses in it, giving him the glasses, opening the Bhagavatam. They were all little things, but I saw them. I guess due to somehow it was in my nature to see these things, and later on it became useful as a servant, because Prabhupada was always seeing the details. It's how he created the society. So then the other day, we're sitting there, I'm massaging Prabhupada's head. Like I said, when you massage Prabhupada, imagine, you massage everything you did it until he told you you could move. You couldn't move from one spot to the next. You couldn't move 12 inches until he gave you permission. That's paying attention to the details. That's what it means to be Krishna conscious. You see everything that's going on. I know different devotees, they see these deities in the morning. They can tell you when that outfit was made, the first time the deities wore that outfit. They can mention all the jewelry on them, when it came along. This is Krishna consciousness. It's not just some easygoing. When they said Shruta Kirti can be temple president in Hawaii, Prabhupada laughed. "He's too easygoing. I'm not serious." Still trying to become serious. It's 49 years later. I'm still trying to learn how to be serious in Krishna consciousness. And I see it in my god brothers, my god sisters, so many of Prabhupada's followers. They're making advancement because they're paying attention to the details of Krishna consciousness. So I massaged, I learned right away. For me, it was natural. I never thought of doing anything independently when I was with Prabhupada, at least for 2 years or so. Then I started to think, and that's what happens. You lose that attentiveness, and all of a sudden you're gone. You don't even know what happened. On the very first morning walks with Prabhupada, before I was a servant in Los Angeles, he saw a 17-year-old boy. I told this. He was behind Prabhupada. We're all huddled around Prabhupada trying to hear every word. But he was watching the sand crabs on the beach running back into their holes. Prabhupada saw it. This boy was just new. A week he had been in the temple. Kirtananda brought him from New Vrindavan. He was getting Prabhupada's personal association. People have been around for years, they couldn't be on these morning walks. But through Kirtananda, I was on the walk, this boy was on the walk. And Prabhupada turned to Kirtananda. He said, "This boy is not serious." Same thing. He's not serious because he was looking at crabs on the beach instead of hearing from the pure devotee. And then Prabhupada said, "He won't last." We got back to New Vrindavan. A week later, he was gone. Just like that. Prabhupada could see everything. He saw the details. He knew what was required for someone to make advancement in Krishna consciousness. But I learned quickly things I tried to. So massaging his head with the sandalwood oil. And then he'd go, and then you started massaging his back with the mustard oil. And you remember to put the cap on the bottle. It was a detail. Who would care about these things? But he would always, if he saw you didn't do it, he would say, the cap. And put the cap on. I learned that lesson later on. You have to listen. If you don't listen to an instruction, your day will come when you realize you should have done what he was asking you to do. So then I'm massaging his back. Prabhupada knew he was coming to India for Kartik, 1972. And then he's looking at Burjan and he said, that's when he said, my god brothers criticize me because I allow women to live in the temple. He said, in India, he said, women, only brahmacharis are living in the temple. He said, in Gaudiya Math, there's no women. He said, only brahmacharis can live in the temple. Then he said, but because I made that adjustment, imagine such an adjustment. He said, because I made that adjustment, he said, we're successful. He said, but still they criticize. He said, but if you go to their temples, he would always say, there's no life. He said, no one's there. He said, only Gaur Purnima, he said, in Mayapur. He said, the temples are filled with widows in white, meaning nothing but women are coming to the temples. But they criticize me, he said. But that's why I've been successful. Because Prabhupada studied. He said that. He said, I studied your culture. I studied the people. And she was giving the descriptions of the first year, all the hardships that Prabhupada was going through. But amongst those hardships, Prabhupada was studying how to give Krishna consciousness to these people, these malechas, how to do it. And that's what he understood. So then I was massaging his back, and then he gave the little nod. Little nod can mean so many things. That time it meant, okay, next spot. So then I'm beside him. When I'm beside him, I would massage his chest, even rub his belly. That was one of my fun parts, was rubbing his belly. He never told me not to, but I always wondered if it was a good thing to do. He never said don't, so it meant it was okay. Then his arms, pull out his arms, pull his fingers, crack his knuckles. Sometimes he could get them to crack. That was, these were like little victories, being with Prabhupada, these little things. And you knew he liked it. But sitting beside him, I was thinking about what he said. And as I said, I asked one of my very few questions, and it was a profound. I said, how do you know the difference, Prabhupada, between making an adjustment and changing a principle? And then he closed his eyes. And I'm massaging, always doing my service. Whatever was going on, doing your service. And then he opened his eyes. He said, that requires a little intelligence. Imagine that one item, he spread Krishna consciousness all around the world. Now you can go around different cultures. Everyone has their adjustments that they make according to the culture. It's what Srila Prabhupada did. And because he did it, he did what no one else had done. None of his god brothers could do. He gave up the whole world Krishna consciousness. So that was in the Manila, Philippines. So then one thing, Prabhupada, I thought I'd tell this one story about Prabhupada traveling. Because traveling was, you had to be ready for lots of variables. Just like now, if we ever get to travel again, we're going to see, we're going to have to make so many adjustments to travel now. No, Prabhupada, even in those days, I remember we would come to India. They had the same system without a lot of, they had your thing would go through, the electronic thing. You would step up on that little stool. Same stool. Probably the very same stools are still there. The little wooden spots, you stand up and the guy. And Prabhupada would say, just see. Even a sadhu, they have no faith. They don't trust anyone. He said, even a sadhu, he would stand there and sometimes they would pass him by. But sometimes he would notice that this was going on. So then traveling, Prabhupada often traveled 20 hours, different flights. So one of the most amazing times was we stopped in Bangkok, Thailand, after being in the plane for 10 hours. And we were only in the transit lounge, and we had to change planes, so they took all the bags off, lined them all up in this hallway. Prabhupada and I were sitting in the chair. I'm sitting beside him, and he looked at me. He said, I need to bathe. Get my things. So I went, hundreds of suitcases. I found our suitcase. I opened it up. Everything was there, always prepared. Everything, Prabhupada's, was in one suitcase. The tiffin was there, towels were there, ready for any situation. I grabbed a towel, grabbed a change of clothes, grabbed the lota. This lota traveled around the world with Prabhupada. And he said, okay, he said, where's the bathroom? Of course, this is 1972. The facilities were not very good. And this was in Bangkok, Thailand. Airport transit lounge was not very special. It was one men's bathroom in the transit lounge. It was as big as this whole area here. And we both walk in. And of course, there's no bathing facilities. And Prabhupada's looking and he says, I have to bathe. So there's on the one side, so many toilet stalls. This other area, the urinals, and then there's like 20 sinks. And he says, we'll bathe here. That was it. He was going to bathe. Just like we're sitting here, there's 50 people in this bathroom. Prabhupada was going to bathe. And I don't know what to do. I don't know what this means. I'm very new with him. But I understood he's going to bathe. So he said, I give him his gumshoe, he takes off his clothing, put it down in a little pile, got his gumshoe. You know how you do the gumshoe, you could do everything. Never exposed, always clothed in some way. Now he's got the gumshoe on. So he's just squatting by the sink, and I'm doing, like here we have Abhishek, right? We're just doing Abhishek in the bathroom, just pouring water over Prabhupada. He's bathing like just like the deities. They don't care, you're here, you're not here, hundreds of people, thousands of people, they're supreme. Prabhupada was like that. He's not paying attention to anyone. He needs to bathe, and this is where he's going to do it. So we're pouring the water over his head, and he finished, gave him his towel, dried off. Then of course the dhoti wraps around the dhoti. Gumshoe drops from underneath of him, underneath the dhoti. Puts on, give him tilak. He always had his ball, chandan. Puts on gopi chandan. And of course, there's an attendant at the doorway the whole time. And me, see, that's part of my observing. I would observe things that were disturbing. I didn't just observe things. I would always think, oh, I'm in trouble. You know, whatever I do, I'm in trouble here. So I'm seeing this attendant over there, and he's doesn't say anything, doesn't do anything, but he's visibly disturbed. So then it was completed. And Prabhupada just starts walking out the bathroom, and I'm right behind him. And now the man's yelling. He's yelling in something. Prabhupada, I said, Prabhupada was deaf. He didn't hear anything he didn't want to hear. He would make like, he didn't understand the language, or he was totally deaf. He just didn't even bother looking in the direction of someone if he didn't want to be noticed, you know, if he didn't want to. So he's just walking out, and I'm behind him, and which I used to do often traveling, was just would shrug my shoulders like, It's Prabhupada. I'm sorry. You don't know what's going on here. And then as we walked out, I said, Prabhupada, man's disturbed. He said, I was tired. He said, I needed to bathe, to refresh. He would always say that, refresh. The very first days on the way to Bangkok, Thailand, we stopped after Los Angeles. Prabhupada stopped in San Francisco for 2 days. Jayananda was there at the time. This is 1972, the beginning of October. And they had a program. Prabhupada had at the university, an evening program. Prabhupada spoke. And Jayananda you never saw, because he was always doing service. He was in the kitchen making popcorn. You all know what popcorn is here, right? But it wasn't making popcorn, of course, it was spicy popcorn, just like you would make muri. That's how he would do the popcorn. So it had asafoetida, different spices, salt like that, hing, turmeric, big, big fats of popcorn. So after the class, Prabhupada even asked, everybody, all the devotees, they came up and surrounded Prabhupada. But Prabhupada observed that Jayananda wasn't in front of him. See, that's what Prabhupada, he saw everything. He knew Jayananda didn't mean he wasn't at the program, obviously. So he found his way. He said, where's Jayananda? Oh, he's in the kitchen facilities making popcorn. So Prabhupada went in to see Jayananda. Just to Hare Krishna. Of course, Jayananda paid his respects. Prabhupada said, well, what is that? Maybe Prabhupada had never seen popcorn before, but he said like that. What is that? He said, oh, it's popcorn, Prabhupada. You want some? Prabhupada said, yes, you can give me some. So they, after the program, they went out on Harinam Sankirtan. They had, Prabhupada spoke, and then they went out on Telegraph Avenue, I believe it's called. They went out to do Harinam. So they gave Prabhupada, he gave Prabhupada a bag of popcorn, like the bags they were giving out. And Prabhupada tasted it, said, very nice. So then we got in the car. Prabhupada just had his hand. Now his hand's in the popcorn, the salty, spicy pop. So he's eating the popcorn. When he was done, he just kept his hand in the bag. And then the devotees drove past the Harinam party with Prabhupada in the car. So you can imagine, everyone went into ecstasy seeing Prabhupada driving by in the car with his hand in the popcorn. So then the next night, Prabhupada spoke again. And they said, Prabhupada, do you want popcorn? He said, no, not tonight. He said, it was very good. He said, but it was difficult for me to digest. He said, and if I eat something, he said, I can't digest. He said, then I can't get up noon, midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning to do my translating work. See that perception, that attentiveness to even what the body's doing, what's good for my service, what isn't good for my service. So he said, no, he said, but it's very tasty. He said, I liked it. He said, but I can't digest so easily. He would always throw out, I'm an old man. Anything you would think, Prabhupada, never saw Prabhupada as an old man. There was nothing about Prabhupada that seemed old. But anyway, he said like that. But when we arrived there in San Francisco, we stayed at one hippie's house. The devotee spent 2 days scouring it from top to bottom. It was a hippie's house, you know. It was very dirty. They told me stories about what it was like cleaning, but they cleaned everything, made it spotless. Prabhupada came and he sat down. And he was sitting there and half a dozen devotees before him. And Prabhupada said, bring some, he said, to wash my feet. Prabhupada told them, he said, you wash my feet. And he said very simply, he said, whenever you have a journey, he said, first thing you do when you get back, he said, you wash your feet up to the knees. He said, if you can't bathe, he said, you wash your feet up to the knees. He said, the whole body becomes refreshed. He said, but this is Vedic culture, you receive a guest. He said, this is what you do. He didn't say, I'm your spiritual master, you just said, what's wrong? No, he said, this is Vedic culture. You have a guest, this is what you do. Here in Krishna Balaram, I remember the same thing. He went out one day. When he came back, I followed him. I would always follow. That's what I did. I just, like a shadow, I just followed Prabhupada. That was my first instruction, follow me. So I followed. And he went to the bathroom and he just turned on the faucet. He washed his feet. He said, it's very refreshing. He said, you just wash your feet and leg like that. He said, and the whole body becomes refreshed. When, I believe it was 1974, it was just after he left here in September of 74, he stopped in Delhi. One Indian Life member, he gave Prabhupada a vase. It was solid silver. It was about this big. It was solid silver, which meant it had some value. And it was engraved to Indira Gandhi. But somehow or other, it turned up for Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada was very happy with it. And he looked at me as soon as he got it, and this man told the story. He said, we'll bring it to Los Angeles. Los Angeles was his headquarters at that time. There was no facilities here. He said, we'll take it to Los Angeles and keep it there. Yes, Prabhupada. So it sat in the suitcase till we got to Los Angeles. And then it was right on Prabhupada's desk. It was a flower vase. Every day, the ladies would put flowers in. We'd come in, Prabhupada's room, everything perfect. Fresh towels every day. Fresh sheets on his bed each day. Beautiful flower arrangements in the vases. So one day, I'm not sure what happened, but we came back early from the morning walk. Everything was timing. Everyone knew you had so much time, usually. Imagine the pujaris. Whenever Prabhupada came back, the deities had to be ready. They had to be ready to open those curtains. If it was 7 o'clock, 7:15, but maybe it's going to be 6:45. And Prabhupada doesn't just stand there. You're going to have to open those curtains. So this is what happened when Prabhupada was with us. You became attentive. He pushed you to know what you're doing, to be conscious, to be attentive. So that you had to be ready all the time. And then there were, I imagine, looking back, I imagine the pujaris had different levels of adorning the deities, wondering when Prabhupada was going to show up. Because as soon as he showed up, that was when you greeted the deities. So one day, he comes back from the morning walk early, like 15 minutes early, comes up the stairs, and there's like 3-4 brahmacharinis, or ladies, married ladies, and they're running around scurrying, trying to finish up in Prabhupada's room, because now he's there. He's never there this early, but he went right up to his room. And he walks into the room, and the vase isn't on the desk. The first thing he noticed, just walk, I don't notice anything that's going on, I'm just following behind, but he said, where's the vase? Oh, Prabhupada, they're putting fresh flowers in. Why are they putting fresh flowers in it? What was wrong with the flowers that were in it? Why are you changing the flower? He just went off. Why are you changing the flower? You don't change them until you need to change them. And why isn't the vase on the desk? Why do you take it out of the room to do it? So, of course, I run downstairs. So you get the vase upstairs now. Run up, put it down. He wasn't finished. He still starts yelling at everyone. Why you do this every day? Why are you so wasteful? Then it started. You Americans, everything you solve with money. You can make all so many mistakes, but you have money to fix it. He said, this is American. He said, this is your Western consciousness. But he said, so many things you can make mistakes, but because you have money, you can fix it. And then he told that funny story. He said, you have pants. He said, and if the pants are too long, you cut them off and you throw away that piece of cloth. He said, that's your American consciousness, just wasting. He said, in India, just like you see, they have those pants here in India, and the women wear the Punjabi, those pants, sometimes they're like 10 feet long, you know. They just pull them up and they sit on the ankles. He said, in India you take the pant and you tuck it in. He said, but not your American style. He would get, in Los Angeles in particular, it was a very robust temple, lots of book distribution, money was always coming in, new Dwarka. It was always, but that very same thing, it would bother Prabhupada that he saw, you have no problem just spending money, so easily spending money. Huh? What did he say here in Vrindavan when Gurudas said, damn cheap Baba. Oh, Prabhupada, it only cost 10 rupees. It was the worst thing you could say, was it only cost so much to Prabhupada. Because if it cost 10 rupees, means it should have cost 2 rupees. But you Americans, you have money. That's okay. Don't even try to bargain. Oh, that's a good deal. So that's the way we were. We can go on a little bit. We have any questions? Would you like? The other thing we're talking about it being attentive to Prabhupada is his servant. See, it's a thing. Being is compared to the pujari, right? Do anything. And it was Gurudas there at Radha Damodar Temple when Prabhupada arrived and he said, Prabhupada, I just want to sit at your lotus feet. And Prabhupada just laughed. He said, but I'm always traveling. He said, how can you do? He said, I'm always traveling. But those lotus feet, they also moved at their own pace, as I found out as Prabhupada's servant. And New Dwarka was a place. Prabhupada, he had so much fun with his disciples. Sometimes I didn't realize it while it was going on, but later on I came to realize how he enjoyed just playing with his disciples. I always mention how he would let them in his room in the morning on the way to the morning walk, and we would just sit there and everyone would watch Prabhupada put on his tilak. Again, the way he put on tilak, you would never want to do it any other way after you saw how he did it, you know, because it just looked perfect, was perfect. And then he pulled out his thread. So everybody, we're all just mirroring, imitating whatever Prabhupada did, we're chanting. Then he starts chanting Gayatri, boom, everyone's chanting Gayatri mantra. And this would happen in every place we went. So after a while I began to realize this is funny, because no one could chant Gayatri as fast as Srila Prabhupada. Even he had his sannyas mantra there at the end. None of us did. But still, he'd finish his mantra, he'd get up and start walking, and you'd have a half a dozen men standing there trying to figure out, you know, because that Gayatri mantra is a special moment, you know, don't look at me, don't talk to me, I don't move, I just look very saintly and chanting. That's one of the first things I saw when I joined the temple in New Vrindavan. One person had Brahman initiation in the temple. It was Labhangala Teek. And some of you, older, you'll know Labhangala Teek. She passed away, I think, within the last year. Wonderful devotee. Her son was DDD, right? Dwarkadish. He's the one, Prabhupada showing him how to write Sanskrit. That's Dwarkadish. He's in his 50s now. So anyway, she would sit there, you know, before breakfast prasad, and we're all waiting to eat. And there's this woman standing there, sitting, saying this secret mantra. You know, we learned this mantra was, Hare Krishna mantra was being given freely, but still there was a secret mantra. And she was chanting it. I would sit and look at her. Sometimes I think maybe she would rise up off the floor. You know? So in the room, Prabhupada, and he would do so much with a straight face, but you know he's laughing. Now I know he was laughing inside, laughing at all of us. He was laughing at us, I think, very often. At his children. Huh? He called his sons and daughters. Also one thing, Prabhupada never called he didn't call anyone Mataji. He told us, mother, we see his mother, we call Mataji. But they were all his daughters. We were his sons and his daughters. And he addressed us as such. Sometimes he would address a letter, "My dear sons and daughters." So anyway, he would get up. Now, I'm not saying any Gayatri mantras while Prabhupada's saying. I know better than that. So I'm standing there at the door because here he comes. Prabhupada's walking barefoot, or maybe socks on, depending on the season. So as he comes to the door, within 20 seconds, you have to hand him his cane. He already has his bead bag around his neck. And you have to get his feet into the shoes. You have a shoehorn, because that made it easier. And Prabhupada didn't stop. He just walked. He literally walked into his shoes as he was walking out the door. So you had the shoehorn, and he start out with his right foot, so you had the shoe right there, and boom, his right foot would go in, and then he'd be walking out the door. So his left foot was further out the door. It wasn't even. He didn't stop. He was walking while you put his shoes on. Every second was valuable. And these were the details that somehow or other I could do it. You know, it's what I saw eventually after 2.5 years, that attentiveness, if you lose that attention in your service, pretty soon you just drift away to some other place. Say Prabhupada had 12 servants or more in 11 years. Because to maintain that level of attention, I think for many of us at that time, our youth and all, it was not such an easy thing. I told you in Caracas, after I had been there 6 months away from Prabhupada, after being his servant for 1.5 years, then I got married, I went to Caracas, Venezuela. I was the Brahmin, then I was the one Brahmin in the temple. And then 6 months later, I'm back at that temple with Prabhupada as his servant again. Oh, I was so proud. I was so happy. Saw my god brothers, god sisters, Karta, Virabahu. They were there at that time, and they were new initiates. So I knew all of them. Javi was one of the great devotees from Caracas Temple. So when we come back with Prabhupada, I'm just looking at my god brothers, god sisters, saying, "Here I am, Prabhupada's servant." They're all looking at Prabhupada. Of course they gave me little. And Prabhupada goes and sits in his Vyasasan. But I lost all my attention because I was trying to enjoy this moment, my moment with my god brothers. And Prabhupada sits down on the Vyasasan, and I'm looking this way and looking that way, see who I recognize. And Prabhupada had socks on. These were my cherished services, taking off his socks, putting on his socks. But now I'm just lost looking at everyone. Prabhupada took his socks off, apparently, by himself. He rolled them in a ball, and he threw them right at my head, which was turned the other way. So all of a sudden, I feel this thing hit me in the head, and I look, and there's Prabhupada's socks. Then he just woke me up in the most delightful way. He didn't say anything. He just threw them right at me. And Prabhupada, whatever he was also expert throwing things. Every now and then he threw something. I told you here in Vrindavan when he threw the ball of chandan, Gopi chandan, the tilak, because a monkey was stealing his shoes while I was offering obeisances at the door. I thought he was throwing it at me because I did something. Well, I did do something wrong. I let the monkey in. But Prabhupada threw it right at the monkey. Of course, they were very fast as well. But Prabhupada was expert also at throwing. So that's what he did. He threw these socks right at me. So in Los Angeles, he'd get his foot in the shoes, his cane in his hand, and he's walking out the door, and you still have god brothers sitting there trying to figure out. They have to get up. Now they know they have to break that a very special moment or ritual of chanting their Gayatri mantra and just follow Prabhupada out the door. And Prabhupada was just always straight. He walked so wonderfully, always straight, always looked ahead. And yet even looking ahead, he had such wonderful peripheral vision. he still knew everything everyone else was doing. Huh? How else could he know when he said to me, "You had four puris," when I said I didn't feel good. He said, "Yeah, you didn't eat much, but you had four puris," and I'm looking at him. Who is this person? How does he know all these things? Srila Prabhupada. So, anyone question? Yes. Yes. Comments. It's very dangerous. And someone asked me about that in my time with Srila Prabhupada. And I think one of the blessings I had was always realizing I was a fool. I was a fool and a rascal. Wasn't very philosophical. I didn't read a lot. And whatever Prabhupada said, I just accepted it immediately. We were just discussing, him and I, we saw the letter, a telegram Prabhupada wrote about his disciple Nitai Das in 1976, I believe it was. Nitai wrote a horrible letter. We won't just say the letter, but in the letter he asked Prabhupada if he could help him find another guru so he could make more advancement, a guru that he had more faith in, so that he could advance further in his Krishna consciousness. See, he was a Sanskrit editor. Prabhupada always say, they read a little Sanskrit, he said, and immediately they just want to kill guru. There were some special souls like Prajumna, Gopi Puranadan. They never liked that. They were always very humble. But some of them, and there were a few of them, they would learn some Sanskrit, learn some Bengali, and they would think Prabhupada mistranslated this, didn't translate this. So, for various reasons, he was visiting, going outside. He had heard from other people. He got contaminated. And he said, "Please give me your blessings so that I can make some advancement from a guru that I have some more faith in." Right? Is that what he said? Like that. And Prabhupada said, "You have my blessings never to advance." Imagine. And then he wrote a letter, a telegram, which he sent the entire GBC body, all the GBC members, and he warned them, this venomous snake, called him a venomous snake, he said, "Be aware, he has become a venomous snake," he said. "He shouldn't be allowed in the temple speak like that." And then the telegram was signed. After, the last thing you read says, "He is a venomous snake, your ever well-wisher." Prabhupada, who could say things like that? "Your ever well-wisher, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada." So that's our Prabhupada. So we all need to remain always humble in our service. Always remain very attentive. And if you see your attention is going the way, then you have to really bear down to again realize this process is very simple. But it requires determination. Always requires our determination and our enthusiasm not to become lax. Yeah? And we have so many wonderful examples here before us. I see so many Prabhupada followers, God brothers, God sisters, next generation doing so nicely because they're attentive in Krishna consciousness. So tomorrow we'll continue. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.